The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. We're broadcasting, this time we're broadcasting live in our beautiful, beautiful new studio at Edstone. We made it through the night, and we're settled in, self-isolating in our Edstone campus. It could be worse, I suppose. If there's anywhere you'd like to self-isolate, it would be our beautiful campus in England. So we made it through to England along with the Turgeons. Brad McDonald is here, quite a few students and staff. Happy to see us, and we're, of course, happy to see them as well. And also, kind of mixed emotions coming back. You obviously miss the area, the beauty of the Midlands here. And at the same time, as we're driving back to Edstone, pointing to restaurants, pubs that are out of business or that are now shut down or have been locked down for the past 3 months. And it just is never ending. And in looking back through, I didn't have as much time for preparation this morning, but just in looking back through some of our programs from last year at this time, some of the things that we were saying early on in this crisis, early on in this pandemic, and how that we said, once you sacrifice or give up freedoms, will they come back? Listen to, there's been some hearings going on regarding the lockdowns, the vaccines, the face masks and such. And you've probably seen some clips of Rand Paul confronting Dr. Fauci. Listen, though, to Rand Paul as he sets up his statement from, I believe this is from yesterday. This is clip 5.
Welcome to day 367 of 15 days to slow the spread. Proponents of the economic lockdowns promised it would be just 15 days to flatten the curve. Instead of 15 days, the lockdown has now gone on for over a year. Early on in the pandemic, as we all remember, there were projections that hospitals would be full and have to turn away people. Medical equipment was in short supply. Businesses were closing. What they hoped would be on a temporary basis as governments started locking down their economies and telling people to stay home. At that time, when programs like PPP were created, no one was under the belief that we would still be doing this a year later, with no end in sight.
A year later, and still with no end in sight. To go through the process, I've explained a little bit about this when I was back in Edmond. To take the test before you could fly to the UK, to then take the test here in the UK on day 2 of the 10-day self-isolation, and then again, a third test. And this is, again, leaving aside the vaccinations, but a third test, and each time it's like 100 pounds of pop over here, it's 250 over there. It's like a tax. And you have to think that there's probably plenty of governments around the world that are looking to try to recoup some of the money that they've been doling out, paying people to stay home. Lockdown, that's another element to this story. A disaster, a complete and total disaster. And then the insistence on face masking. Well, Dr. Fauci, as I say, he was there in front of Rand Paul, and to Rand Paul's credit, he confronted him on the lack of science behind so many of these decisions coming from the chief doctor of all, Dr. Anthony Fauci. Listen to this exchange, clip 1.
No evidence that there are significant reinfections after vaccine. In fact, I don't think we have a hospitalization in the United States after the 2-week period after the second vaccination. We don't have a death in the United States.
You're not hearing what I'm saying about variants. We're talking about wild type versus variants.
And what proof is there that there are significant reinfections with hospitalizations and death
from the variants? None in our country. Zero.
Well, because we don't have a prevalent of a variant yet. We're having one. Can I finish? We're having 117 that's becoming more dominant.
You're making policy based on conjecture.
He's exactly right. You're making policy based on conjecture. So Rand Paul's point is that, look, if you're getting the vaccine, and if that's supposed to take care of everything, then why do we need to continue on wearing the masks and so on? At what point does this stop, in other words? When does this end? You notice there, he said, Dr. Fauci did, because we don't have a prevalent of a variant yet. In other words, it could happen. And because it could happen, even if you've gotten the vaccine, then you still need to mask. In fact, you need to double up. You need to wear two masks. So when does this end? When does it stop? Listen to Dr. Fauci exactly a year ago. This was March 8th, not exactly, I guess, but about a year ago. And here's Dr. Fauci on wearing a mask, clip 6.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
You're sure of it? Because people are listening really closely to this.
Right now, people should not be walking. There's no reason to be walking around with a mask. When you're in the middle of an outbreak, wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better, and it might even block a droplet, but it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is.
That's him a year ago saying you don't need to wear it, don't worry about it, just carry on with your lives. And now he's, as Rand Paul says, he parades around with two masks, he's had the vaccine, and he's telling you, do the masking, do the vaccine, carry on with the lockdowns. And no one from that political class is saying there's potentially an end in sight. Dr. Biden, or Joe Biden, I guess he's married to a doctor, he says, if we're good, if we're behaved, maybe we can have a small gathering at July 4th. That's the most that we've been given to this point. Listen, going back to the hearings from this week, listen to Rand Paul just pretty much body slamming Dr. Fauci. Here's clip 2.
You've been vaccinated and you parade around in two masks for show.
No.
You can't get it again. There's virtually 0% chance you're going to get it, and yet you're telling people that have had the vaccine, who have immunity. You're defying everything we know about immunity by telling people to wear a mask who've been vaccinated. No. Instead, you should be saying there is no science to say we're going to have a problem from the large number of people being vaccinated. You want to get rid of vaccine hesitancy? Tell them they can quit wearing their mask after they get the vaccine. Okay. You want people to get the vaccine? Give them a reward instead of telling them that the nanny state's going to be there for 3 more years and you got to wear a mask forever. People don't want to hear it. There's no science behind it.
He's right. Again, there's no science behind this. And he's asking Dr. Fauci, where is the proof? You speak of the variants. So how many people are in hospitals as a result of getting the sickness again because of the so-called variant? Either the vaccine works or it doesn't. And if they're insisting that you get it, they believe it works. But then there's the variant. And so it doesn't stop, does it? It just continues. It just continues. And you look at the way these guys lead their lives when the cameras are off. Fauci last summer, remember, at the height of the pandemic, he was photographed at the Nationals baseball game, I think it was, with 3 or 4 other people. The mask was off. I mean, he was having a great time. He was having as much fun as John Kerry on that plane earlier this week. No mask, no mask in sight, which violated the mandate from American Airlines. There he is sitting in first class and no mask. The same people insisting that you wear a mask. And when the cameras are off, they proceed to carry on with their lives. But if you and I do it, well, you've seen those other reports of people being thrown off of planes. The one case recently, I think they had a 4-year-old with autism that wouldn't wear a mask, and so they kicked the family off the plane. It's unbelievable. And there's, as I say, there's no end to this nonsense. It's madness. It is madness. Sanjay Gupta, he's the resident expert, the medical expert at CNN, listened to him defending Dr. Fauci in this pretty tense exchange that he had with Senator Paul, clip three.
There's another point, just quickly, Jake. People who are vaccinated, they get exposed to the virus learns then how to sort of adapt and mutate now to a vaccinated person. So in some ways, by exposing vaccinated people to the virus, you could start to inspire more and more mutations, which is something you don't want to do. So until the vaccine is contained, the virus is contained, I think, you know, masks, at least in public, will be recommended.
So there he is defending Fauci and telling us how much the virus learns. It's going to mutate. And so, in other words, there's no end to this. There's no end to it. What did he say at the start? Welcome to day 367, 15 days to stop the spread. And what's the best proof that we can put forward to suggest or to tell you that the lockdowns, that's another, as I said, another ugly side to this story, but what's the best proof there is that the lockdowns don't work? The fact that we're on day 367 to stop the spread, and the vanity of these people, the arrogance, the God complex, they know what to do. You lock it down and we're going to stop this disease in its tracks. Did it stop? Did it stop the spread? We're over a year into it now. And you've got places like England here, total lockdown, no restaurants, not just the essentials. Still. And this is one of the leading countries in terms of taking the vaccine. And still, vaccines, double masks, lockdown. This was, I don't know if this was in the same hearing, but this is the doctor from Stanford who, he doesn't just take everything Fauci says as the gospel truth. Here he is, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but he's from Stanford, and he's talking here about the lockdowns, clip four.
International evidence and the American evidence is clear. There's the lockdowns have not stopped the spread of the disease in any measurable way. The disease spreads by aerosol, by droplets. It's a respiratory disease. It's very difficult to stop. The idea of the lockdown is incredibly, I mean, in some ways beguiling. It's like if you just stay apart far enough, like rats in cages, we won't spread the disease. But humans are not like that. And to have that happen, we can't actually, and in fact, what's happened instead is we've exposed working class people, we've exposed poor people to the disease at higher rates. The lockdowns have I'd call it trickle-down epidemiology, right? We've created this sort of, this illusion that we can control the disease spread when in fact we cannot, and it's failed to do so.
So that's him at the hearing, Dr. Batacaria, something like that, talking about again, no evidence. There is no evidence that the lockdowns have worked. Now, as I say, you go back to some of the things that we were saying on this program, at the trumpet.com website, in the Trumpet magazine. We had an article last May, "The Cure is Killing Us." And notice what we wrote here. "These measures will no doubt save lives that would have been cut short by the virus, but they are also coming at incalculable cost to our economies, our livelihoods, our civil liberties and freedoms, our social cohesion, even mental and physical health. In many ways, it appears the ramifications of the reaction to the coronavirus will dwarf and far outlive the virus itself." That was last May, almost a year ago. The ramifications of the reaction to this virus, it will dwarf and far outlive the virus itself. If these people, these experts, really and truly were afraid, they're out there scaring everyone else. And then they settle into their airplane seat and take the mask off. That tells you something about what they really think. They are drunk on power. They are obsessed with amassing more power. This is from last March. It was a Peter Hitchens tweet. He was pretty outspoken in his criticism of Boris Johnson and the government here in the UK and some of these extreme measures that they were taking. He said last March, anyone else out there still have any regard for liberty? It is striking that the country of Magna Carta, habeas corpus, and the Bill of Rights should be put under house arrest by a prime minister. This is the way the world ends, not with a bang, but with a giggle. Now, he came under quite a lot of criticism himself, Peter Hitchens, for just challenging the conventional wisdom that all of, it just started right then and there. And now, as I say, there's no end to it. It just continues. Hitchens said later, until tonight, I was free to leave my home whenever I chose, for whatever purpose I chose, for as long as I chose, and go wherever I chose. A freedom I used to the full. Now all those freedoms have been extinguished. And throughout the year, 2020, we were saying, look, once you sacrifice those freedoms, once you let go of them, it's going to be very difficult to get them back. He said again, what is interesting is how many people attack me for attacking this blatant assault on liberty. I just can't believe how many are attacking me. Instead of standing up to the authorities and saying, enough, enough. We shut down the restaurant. We've strapped these cloth masks around our face. Just months after you said they didn't work. We've lost our livelihoods. Our kids haven't gone to school. And what about that one? 6 feet apart, and now they say 3 feet. And nobody comes out and apologizes. No, they just sound like this is the, as I say, the gospel truth. It has to be this way. And we're at 3 feet from the start. It would have been a completely different scenario for school children. As it is, everything's shut down. We talked to a dance instructor recently about competitions, major competitions for this year, and they're gonna see if they can maybe get one of the majors scheduled for the end of this year. But you know, the ones this spring and summer, no dance competitions for the kids. You've got to shut it all down. Shut it all down. There was a piece last year again. I just went through some notes from, it was one of our shows in March, this article from Spiked Online. Why are so many journalists clamoring for a police state? See, that's part of the problem here. The media, they want this. Rand Paul says what he says in a hearing, and then right away, Jake Tapper gets up, and they attack Rand Paul, not Fauci. No, no. Everything he says, even if he contradicts what he said months ago, or in some cases, weeks ago, they go after Rand Paul for saying, show me the evidence. Show me the facts. Where are the hospitalizations for variants of this disease? And what does Fauci say? Well, we don't have a prevalent of a variant yet, but it's coming. Have you heard that before? It is coming, and boy, it's going to be bad. It's going to be terrible. It's going to spread across the country. And especially so in red states, especially in states like Texas and California, or sorry, Florida, certainly not California. They're perfect. Gavin Newsom, he handled that perfectly. Same with Governor Cuomo in New York, perfectly. Governor Murphy in New Jersey, same thing. Politicized from the very beginning. And here are these journalists just clamoring for a police state. They're closet communists themselves. It says, in the age of COVID-19, the media clamor for a total shutdown of all public life and for the police or army to line the streets. And that message has become deafening, it says here. It says some journalists have become positively unhinged in their demands for a police state. They demand it. It says the effect of this reporting, well, again, this was a story from last year at this time. And here we are, as Rand Paul eloquently put it, day 367. This was probably from yesterday. So here we are, day 368 of the 15 days to slow the spread. When we come back, we'll continue with our recent study of the subject of perseverance. Winners never quit, as I've covered over the last couple of programs. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. You can send us some feedback, td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Do you believe the United States of America has been mainly a positive force in the world for most of its history? Do you believe that America was at one time a great nation? The United States of America was founded on many biblical principles that were incorporated into the Constitution. This lent to its success and positive influence in the world. But the America of then is not the America of today. To anyone examining the current state of America, this should be alarming. It has been a great nation in time past and is experiencing a temporary resurgence in these end times, but it will only be exactly that, temporary. Our free booklet, Great Again, will explain America's status. It will prove that God has been intimately involved in the rise and resurgence of America under President Donald Trump. It will also explain why God is saving America temporarily, how he was doing it, and what is yet to come in America. There is a spiritual dimension to America's rise and decline as a superpower. This free booklet will explain this dimension and how God will soon make America truly great again. Request your free copy of our book, Great Again, at our website, thetrumpet.com.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
So in the last couple of programs, we've pointed to some really inspiring examples in secular history and Bible history, the examples like Jacob or Herbert Armstrong or Ulysses S. Grant, Abraham Lincoln, Winston Churchill. These individuals, these towering figures of history that really and truly did have the courage to go forward and not stop and not quit, even when they came under a withering attack, or attacks plural, they continued on. In the case of Herbert Armstrong, again, there's so many excellent examples in his autobiography, where he talked about how that he had to, well, there were times he actually did feel like or wanted to throw in the towel, but he didn't. He kept fighting. He wrote about his early days in advertising. He said, "In those days, I worked sporadically in streaks. I seemed to have my off days and my on days. When I was on, I was red hot. And as I fancied, at least very brilliant," these were his cocky days before God converted him to the truth. He said, "But on the off days, it seemed I couldn't sell anything. I became very uncomfortably aware of this great fault, and I tried to fight it, but it took me years to overcome it. But I did overcome it eventually." He did overcome it eventually, and he learned how to be more consistent, and he learned how to be more persistent. He says also in the autobiography, "One of the great success lessons that you need to learn is persistence. To stay with a thing, to stay with it." And remember the example, again, with his uncle, Uncle Frank, who said, "Look, this may look like a better opportunity over here, But I want for you to stay with it, or I suggest that you stay with it, because there's been this tendency in our family to just, you know, move on to something new and different and to not really stay the course. That's a great lesson to learn. One of the great lessons that we need to learn is that of persistence. And in this race that we're in, we've got to persistently go about our training every day, every day. Look at the example of 1 Corinthians 9, or the example Paul uses here in this passage. 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 24, it says, "Know you not that they which run in a race run all, but one receives the prize?" It says, "So run that you may obtain." Run that you might obtain the prize. Go after it, in other words. It's like we're in a marathon race. They had a half marathon in Edmond for the college students and others just this past Sunday. And as I was saying the other day, I mean, you've got to pace yourself, but you've got to continue. You've got to keep going. It's an endurance course. It's a test. But run with a positive and confident mindset that you will obtain the prize, that God will back you up. It says in verse 25, "And every man that strives for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible." We're like athletes in training, spiritually speaking. We're training for God's coming kingdom and family. This is verse 26. Paul says, "I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beats the air, but I keep under my body," it says, "and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway." See, Paul knew the course that he was on. He knew the training that it took to finish, and he pressed ahead, serving God. He worked at his calling, his vocation. He set a fantastic example of someone who, even with all of the obstacles and trials and tests that he went through and endured, he didn't quit. He didn't give up. In fact, he was, even to the very end, he was overjoyed. You read 2 Timothy, and it's inspiring to think here he's about to be executed, and he's telling Timothy about this crown that he had qualified for, this crown that would be waiting for him at his resurrection from the dead. It says, and this is a proverb, actually, Proverbs 24 and verse 16. It says, "For a just man falls seven times and rises up again, but the wicked shall fall into mischief." A just man, he may fall down once, twice, seven times, in fact. And yet he gets up each time. He rises up again. That's Proverbs 24 and verse 16. Here's what Mr. Armstrong had to say in his booklet, The Seven Laws of Success. It says 9 in 10, at least once or twice in a lifetime. I think I might have given you this quote last time, but it's worth repeating. 9 in 10, at least once or twice in a lifetime, come to a place where they appear to be totally defeated. All is lost, apparently that is. They give up and quit when just a little more determined hanging on, just a little more faith and perseverance, just a little more stick-to-itiveness would have turned apparent certain failure into glorious success. See, that's the way we need to think. Even when we fail at something, or maybe the experience doesn't work so well, look at it as a stepping stone to success. Follow the course of others. Thomas Edison, all the attempts that he made to make a light bulb, failure after failure after failure, but he was just learning along the way what didn't work. And as he kept working at it and refining it, then finally, look at what happened in the end. Someone once said, "Perseverance is a good substitute for talent." It's a good substitute, someone that, just stays with it. And again, there's so many examples, good examples in the Bible. And it's easy to read right over it and say, well, it says this about Abraham and then this and then this, and he made a mistake here. But in some cases, God made these promises and it was years, decades sometimes, before, well, in the case of Abraham and Sarah, before they had a son that God had promised. They had to wait on God patiently. Moses went out into the wilderness for 40 years and he learned some valuable lessons before God then brought him back to lead the Israelites out of captivity. There's other examples. Samson, David, Peter. A lot of these individuals made some pretty significant mistakes as well, but they learned from them and they didn't give up. They didn't quit. And look at how the story ended. Someone once said, the person who is never challenged is never refined. You see, God has promised, in fact, that we're going to face difficulty and trial and test. And that's all part of the character building process. Hebrews 12, look at this. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1. It says, wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. You see, run with patience. Run, knowing that you're going to have to continue. Now, if you can set aside those weights, those sins, you can run faster. You can pick up the pace. Sin is like weight. Sin is like strapping weights to your ankles. It does slow you down. But if you let go of those sins and just follow God, follow Jesus Christ, looking at that example that's out in front, verse 2 brings this out, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. He's right there. He endured, it says. He endured the cross. He even endured through the crucifixion, the scourging, the beating, and then the killing, and all of the struggle and the agony. He endured it all, despising the shame, and now he's set down at the right hand of God. Paul says, look to this Christ as your example. Look at the joy that was set before him. How could God the Father and Christ the Son view those events surrounding the crucifixion and actually receive joy from it? Well, because they knew that this opened the way for God's family to expand into the billions. What an example. Verse 3, it says, for consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest you be wearied and faint in your minds. Consider, in other words, consider what sin did to Jesus Christ. He resisted even unto the crucifixion. He sweat blood in those final hours, resisting against sin, resisting against the pulls of the flesh. He never did give up in this fight. And Paul says in verse 4, you have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin. Christ poured out even drops of blood in his fight against sin, in his fight to resist sin. And Paul says, look, none of us have ever come close to that kind of tenacious fighting spirit. But that's the example we look to, as verse 2 brings out, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher. You see, we've got to finish. It's great to begin. It's great, as I've said recently, it's great to get off to a good start. But all of that is for naught if we don't finish. Look to Christ, the author and the finisher of our faith. The finisher. James 5. We'll look at a few verses here in this passage, this chapter. You see the word over and again, behold, behold. God's trying to get our attention. Look here. Look at this. Verse 7 of chapter 5. This is in James. It says, be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. In other words, endure to the end. Be patient unto the coming of the eternal. Behold, it says, the husbandman waits for the precious fruit of the earth and has long patience for it until he receives the early and latter rain. See, a farmer has to be patient when waiting on the harvest. He's got to be busy and do his work during the time leading up to it, just to prepare for that harvest, just to protect those plants and the fruit that comes from them, to make sure there's healthy soil and that weeds are kept away and so on. It says, be you also patient, verse 8, establish your hearts, for the coming of the eternal draws near. So here is James emphasizing the imminency of Christ's coming. Behold, it says, it's near. Make sure that you stay the course. You don't want anything to happen right at the last where you give up on God. Verse 9 continues, grudge not one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge stands at the door. The judge is right there. He's right there. We're about to go before Christ our judge, and we're going to have to give an account. And even if we've had our ups and downs, as I said in the first installment of this series, even if we have our ups and downs, God really does admire and love someone who stays in the fight, just like Jacob in that wrestling match. And God looked at him and said, what's your name? Well, I'm going to change it to Israel. You deserve a royal title because you have a lot of fight in you. You have a lot of endurance. You have a lot of perseverance. You have a lot of stick-to-itiveness. Let me just conclude with a couple more verses. I don't have them in my notes, but look at 1 Corinthians 13. This is the Apostle Paul's writing here. 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter, we sometimes call it. Went through this just the other day in a forum with the college students. And notice what's part of this definition. It says in verse 3, and though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not charity, it profits me nothing. Charity or godly love, really it's talking about agape love. God's love suffers long and is kind. It says God's love envies not and so on. Well, I'd encourage you to read the rest of the definition there, but I just wanted to emphasize the first statement there regarding God's love. It suffers long. It suffers with Christ. That's in Romans 8, I think verse 17. There's other verses that talk about fellowshipping with Christ's suffering. So as part of counting the cost, Luke 14, we've got to be prepared and ready to take up our cross and to follow Christ, to take up that stake and follow the Lord Jesus Christ, follow in his steps, the author and the finisher of our faith. And if God's love dwells in us, it says there that it suffers long. It doesn't give up. Many of you are familiar with the story of Job. Look at the end of this story briefly. Job 42. Job 42. And I mean, God had to really, he had to really put Job through the ringer to help him see, to help him understand that he had a horrible self-righteousness problem. This was a man who was, you know, he was upright, humanly looking. I mean, he had it all together. And he could not, for the life of him, he could not see what his sin was. And these counselors came in, they tried to tell him, and they gave him unwise counsel for the most part. But in the last few chapters, in the interactions and the dialogue between Job and God, God really got through to him finally and basically said, who do you think you are? You're just a puny little human being, and I'm God. I brought you into existence. I brought the world around you into existence and the universe above. And Job finally was humbled. He was finally humbled. Verse 6 or verse 5, it says, I have heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. Wherefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. So he was finally repentant. He finally saw himself in relation to God. He finally saw it properly, the way it should have been from the very beginning. It says in verse 9, so Eliphaz, the Temanite, and Bildad, and these counselors, it says, they did according as the Eternal commanded, and the Eternal also accepted Job. Verse 10, and the Eternal turned the captivity of Job when he prayed for his friends. Also, the Eternal gave Job twice as much as he had before. So there was God trying to teach him this all-important lesson, trying to save him, basically, from losing it all. And Job, if he would have quit, he would have lost it all. But he didn't give up. He kept fighting, and he, of course, humbled himself at the end of this story. But it isn't the end, is it? Verse 6, wherefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. And then it says in verse 10 that God gave Job twice as much as he had before. He had lost everything, and God gave him twice as much in the end. There was a huge reward at the end because of his endurance, his patience. And then you get to the New Testament and you see God really commenting, it's in the book of James, commenting on the patience of Job. Twice as much that he had at the beginning than he had at the beginning. It says, then came there unto him, this is verse 11, all his brethren and his sisters, and all they that had been of his acquaintance before, and did eat bread with him in his house, and they bemoaned him and comforted him. All the evil that the Eternal had brought upon him, every man also gave him a piece of money, and every one an earring of gold. And the Eternal blessed the latter end of Job more than his beginning. And then it goes on and talks about how his estate had, just multiplied. The blessing at the end, it was better than at the beginning. So it's important. It's important to get off to a good start. We all want that. But the finish line is what matters most. The finish line is all important. The finish line is what we're aiming for. We have to finish. We have to finish. Winners never quit. And as the saying goes, quitters never win. God brought you into this to win. God brought you into this to lead you to victory. And he will. He will lead us to victory if we look to him, if we follow him, and if we never give up. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with some viewer feedback that's come in from some of you. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. the Bible, and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
A few emails here from you, the viewers or the listeners. One says, I took immediate action in an area of life where I needed to make a change based on something said in yesterday's program. It was not easy, but it had to be done. Thank you. Where in the world do we get encouragement to get in line with God's laws besides from His church? This one here commenting on some of the things we discussed in the first segment. It says, about a similar subject, I guess. It's in response to a program the other day. It says, thank you for your email and service to God's work. I appreciated God's light shining education on one of Satan's ruling foundational doctrines of you can eat from the tree and won't die. It says modern medicine can be traced back to Nimrod and the Tower of Babel. It says the people loved Nimrod because he symbolized going your own way without God ruling over you. But they were unsure about following after Nimrod because they were concerned about what would happen to them if they broke God's laws of health and the penalty for its sickness and disease. It says, Nimrod began what is now medicine and the attitude that sickness is normal and a part of life. Just go to the doctor or go to the gods and get a prescription of poison and you can continue breaking God's health laws. And then further on, it's a fairly lengthy email, but further on it says, I'm also reminded of Jesus overcoming Satan in Matthew 4. Satan tried to tempt Jesus to take a knee and to worship Satan. But Jesus rebuked him and commanded Satan to leave, and Satan did. I'm following Christ's lead and refusing to take a knee or a vaccine, forever grateful to learn the truth. Thank you all for giving us real saving teachings. Another one here says, thank you for your daily endurance, exposing the truth. Your program is spirited and dynamic, and yet so early in the morning, Oklahoma time, God's strength is revealed in you. It takes grit to daily watch and hear the absolute wickedness of the fake administration, but if we turn away from knowing, we turn from the truth. Jesus commands us to pray and to watch always. It says, children attending school in Ontario can only remove their mask while eating lunch with strict orders to not turn the head left or to the right. This is in school in Canada. Unbelievable. This must be so traumatizing. They've got to cover up their mouths. They can't get fresh air. They can't turn and look at one another. 368 days to stop the spread. Another one here says, I'm deeply grateful that my children know the dangers of this cure vaccination and are not getting the vaccinations. I'm also grateful that they are not subjecting their children to this madness. It is frightening to know what this new vaccine is capable of. Satan is a liar and a murderer and will do anything to aid in this madness. I find it appalling that Biden says, if you play nicely, I'll let you celebrate July 4th. Thank you for continuing to get the truth out there. Another one here says, as always, thanks to all involved in getting the truth out to the people. I don't trust any pre-recorded news due to the editing that could be involved. And unless it's seen live as it is happening, one doesn't know if it's true. My fear is when they figure out how to manipulate live footage. Keep up the good work. It says, the people need the truth. God our Father's warnings. For time is short. Another one here says, I would like to thank the church for continuing to provide impactful messages. The recent Key of David program, reflecting on Enoch and the book of Jude, reminded me of how much Enoch's life is much like what you are doing right now. I would like to be a member, but I'm struggling with several aspects of the repentance process. It says, with more education and action, I'm getting closer. Learning how to pray is helping a lot. Thanks for providing the booklet. This one here says, if God wasn't a God of judgment, he wouldn't have destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. This is in response to the comment the other day. I forget that soundbite. It talked about, Don Lemon, I believe, who said that God was not a God of judgment and that he was just wanting you to live your life however you wanted. It says he is a God of judgment. I figured someone would eventually go after Tucker Carlson. Hope he keeps giving us the truth, as you folks do. Thank you for all of your hard work. Another one here, it comes all the way from South Africa. It says, I thank God for you and your dad witnessing to the world at the momentous time and at this momentous time in man's history. It's so refreshing hearing your frank reporting and declaring of God's word with integrity in these violent, faithless, and fallacious times. Watching the news coming out of the USA can be so rankling at times. It's great to hear you call it out for what it truly is. We often chuckle when hearing your digs at the bald-faced lies and the Emmy Award acting. We're just so grateful that the truth is getting out before it's too late. It says, the situation in America is keeping us on the edge of our seats. Our family discussions around the table are energetically spiced with the current news, what God says on the matter, prophecies, and what is coming from headquarters, your daily news on the TD, the trumpet brief, etc. Living at this time is just so exhilarating. Pretty good feedback there from South Africa. This comes from one of our viewers in Oklahoma. It says, truly, there's an evil at work in this country of ours. It's obvious, but how many can see it? The video clip of the man posing as a woman who aspires to be the Assistant Secretary of Health discussing children, cross-gender, or else emancipating themselves from their parents is pure evil. It is anti-Bible. Science, without God, can now affect the hormonal state of our bodies in an effort to blot out the Creator's plan and purpose for creating sex. But God's purpose will stand. Marriage will not soon be obsolete. God created humans, male and female. This is explained in the first book of the Bible. It's simple. It's simple. It is simple. It's wonderful. It's prophetic. It says, Herbert W. Armstrong explained that the institution of marriage is eternal. Christ will marry his bride. It says, what fruits will this eternal marriage bring forth? A future of peace and happiness. Thank you for fighting so hard. Thank you for never letting down. Please keep teaching us. The Trumpet Daily crew is a gift to the world. Stand and be strong, it says there. One more, maybe a couple. It says, I'm watching this and just shaking my head at these childish politicians and fake media staff. When AOC claimed to be threatened, I was just sickened in my stomach. This is from a couple weeks back. Thankfully, the truth is spoken on the TD, and the radical left, it says, is being exposed. This one here comes from Texas. It says, thank you so very much for your unwavering dedication to God and his message of ultimate importance to the world, praying daily for uninterrupted spiritual nourishment, spiritual food provider TD, likened to electricity provider, through the TD team and PCG staff, many blessings received. It says, in this house, on this particular street, amongst complete outages, not one disruption was experienced of electric power, natural gas, or water through this epic winter storm. This goes back to the deep freeze from a couple weeks ago. It says, God is good and can certainly provide the needs for his people. Again, thank you, TD team, for the nourishment and the sustenance. Well, if you'd like to submit some feedback, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. a.m. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily in the Edstone studio, our beautiful UK campus. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you next week.